Now to two other big international stories from the week. The tensions between the Trump administration and the Iranian regime and the inaugural meeting of Donald Trump's Board of Peace in Washington. It was there, somewhat paradoxically, that the two came together as the US president spoke of peace, but also threatened US military action against Tehran. Let's talk to Robert Malley from Yale University. He served as US special envoy for Iran during the Biden administration. He's also the co-author of a recent book on Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations. Robert Malley, thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thanks for having me.
But bring us up to speed. President Trump says he'll know within 10 days if a deal with Iran is possible. And meanwhile, the US has amassed this really massive military firepower around the Middle East. As somebody who's been deeply involved in dealing with Iran, have you got any sense of how this is going to play out?
Well, I don't think dealing deeply with Iran would be a huge asset in this case. It's dealing deeply with President Trump, an experience I do not have, because I think really so much of it depends on where he wants to go. If he wants to reach a deal that he would be able to reasonably claim is a stronger deal than the one President Obama negotiated with Iran in 2015, he has a pathway to do that. But he, as you said, he's amassed such an extraordinary arsenal of military firepower, greater than anything the U.S. has amassed since the 2003 war in Iraq, that he does seem to be leaning more in that direction. So I'm afraid I can't clarify where things are going, because this is the most unpredictable of presidents, who has an ability to go in one direction and then shift in another and never feels the need to either justify it or explain it.
I think what's been notable about this is that lack of explanation from the Trump administration about why it would launch military action. I mean, last year, after the strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities, the Trump administration claimed to have seriously degraded them. Earlier this year, it threatened military action to punish the regime for its brutal suppression of what were thought to be the biggest public uprising since the Islamic Revolution of 1979. Have you got a clearer sense of their rationale for possible war? Because it does seem rather opaque.
I think you're putting it mildly, and I think you're absolutely right, because depending on the day and the official who is speaking, we hear different rationales. At this point, this seems to be a military operation that is still in search of a purpose and a justification and an objective. We don't know what it's about, and President Trump has not felt the need to articulate it, which is quite extraordinary. And I think it's left many Americans, at least I suspect people around the globe, sort of wondering what this is about. But it also makes it harder to criticize, because we don't really know what he's after. If it's a nuclear operation, as you said, it's pretty hard to understand, because he has claimed himself, and I think it's fair to say he may not have obliterated the nuclear program. That clearly was an overstatement, but he has clearly set it back. So it could be about that. It could be, as you say, about the what he said, which is, I'm going to come to the aid of the Iranian people. But a bit late for that, so it's not clear what he would do now other than punish the people who perpetrated the massacre. Or is it about just weakening Iran, which is also possible, and he has hinted at times that what he wants to do is make sure that Iran cannot engage in any more mischief. But this is an argument that shifts by the day. And I should add that there is no legal justification domestically or internationally for the war that he seems to be heading towards.
There's the talk of a possible deal. I wonder your sense of a framework for the deal. According to reporting from the New York Times this week, in the negotiations which took place in Geneva, Mr. Trump's two leading negotiators, Steve Witkoff and his son-in-law Jared Kushner, pressed Iran to permanently give up their ability to enrich uranium. That's something the Iranians have always been unwilling to do. How are they going to square that circle?
So there was an interesting exchange just this morning. The Iranian foreign minister appeared on American TV, and then a White House official responded indirectly, in which it seems to be the case, who knows, but it seems to be the case that Iran is prepared to suspend its enrichment at least for some time. And the debate could be how long the suspension would be and what would happen at the end of that period. Because it is, to me, inconceivable that Iran would agree to permanently suspend or permanently forego enrichment. But you do have this sort of interesting position right now where Iran is not enriching. It can't really enrich because of the strikes that took place last June, so it doesn't really have the capacity to. It could quickly restore it, but it hasn't done it. And so it is in a position now where it could say, we're suspending enrichment because of the attacks that occurred, and we need some time, and we're prepared to use this time to build confidence with the U.S. which would allow the Trump administration to say that they've achieved something that none of its predecessors did, not President Biden, not President Obama, which is to get Iran to stop enriching, at least for a significant period of time. And Iran could come out and say, we never gave up the right to enrich. It's still an inalienable right. And so that's what, so both sides could, in a way, declare victory. It's hard then to, you'd have to square the circle about what happens at the end of this suspension. There are some interesting ideas out there, some kind of consortium, a number of countries that would be enriching, including Iran, maybe on Iranian soil, maybe not on Iranian soil, maybe with some U.S. role. So again, if what is, the U.S. and Iran are after is a reasonable agreement, there is a way to get there, but it's not clear at this point, as we were just saying, what the American objective is. And if it is no enrichment forever, that's going to be probably too hard to attain. And if it's to ask Iran to also forego its missile defense capability, that also is probably a bridge too far.
You have a fascinating insight here. You have negotiated with Iran. What's that like?
I wish that that experience could be transposed, because you do have a different team in power now. But what is clear, in some ways, the Iranian side is the less opaque. What they want to do is maintain as much of their capability for as long as they can and drag out the talks as much as possible in order to gain time. That has been their modus operandi for as long as I've followed this. They make concessions, but very reluctantly, after dragging it out and in order to maintain as much of leverage at the end of the negotiations as possible. The problem for them is they're now facing an American president who's impatient, who's unpredictable, and who doesn't really like this kind of game. And therefore, that's what happened to them last June. They thought they were in the middle of the kind of negotiations that they were used to with the U.S., and all of a sudden, the American president decided to strike in the middle of the talks. So again, as it's what I said in response to your first question, Iranian expertise matters, but at this point, Trump expertise would matter more.
Let's talk about the Board of Peace, which held its first meeting in Washington this week. This is an organization chaired by President Trump that will aim to reconstruct and reshape Gaza after years of war. You've been involved in peacemaking efforts in the region. You've written about the previous failed attempts to forge peace. What do you make of this board? It is mocked by many people. The European countries have decided not to take part. But when it comes to Gaza, does it have the potential to succeed?
So obviously it's deserving of some mockery. I think that it's fair. If you read the charter, it's all in the hands of one person and who's there for life. And it's a very, very unusual and I would say pretty outrageous construct. But you are making a point, which, you know, people who've been involved in negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians in the past have to recognize that it is under his presidency that a ceasefire was obtained for all of its limitations, and they are serious. And if you're, you know, there are a number of Palestinians who are killed every day under the guise of the ceasefire, but it is far safer to be a Palestinian in Gaza today than it was a few months ago. And President Trump's unorthodox style of putting pressure when he feels he needs to put pressure, but also engaging unorthodox way with Hamas, which none of his predecessors has done, and using transactionalism and pressure as a means of trying to obtain results. It's hard for me to call this peacemaking. This is not peace. At best, what you could get is some kind of truce in which the people of Gaza will not be subjected to daily bombardment. But this is not peace in the sense that the Palestinians really have not had a say in what's happening to them. There was no Palestinian who was involved in the negotiations of the deal, and their presence on the Board of Peace is null. So it's very hard to talk about peace when one of the parties is not involved. I think what you could talk about is transactional deals that the president seems to have some predilection for, in which he manages to cobble something together, which is better than the status quo, but is a far cry from peace, and sets some pretty dangerous precedents in terms of non-respect for international law and the sort of predatory style of American diplomacy. But I think we have to look at it sort of in a holistic way. There's some elements there that may be better than the alternative. On the whole, I understand perfectly well why many countries refuse to attend the meeting.
Robert Malley of Yale University, a one-time Iranian envoy for the Biden administration. Thank you so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.